Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Oh my gosh, it's Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's.
Day of love.
You're so sweet.
Amazing.
You bring me chocolate. My husband didn't even bring me chocolate. You're so
well,
sweet.
Well, maybe not yet, right? You never know what he's going to show up with tonight, right?
That was so sweet. But
you might get a Barbie dipped in chocolate.
Oh my God,
right?
That would be so
funny. He works for Mattel, right?
Right, exactly. That would be so
Barbie
funny.
Chocolate, I'm telling you, if he's listening.
That's like
right
a different
now.
Type of gift. But wait, I have a crazy story for you. Can I just jump right in?
Of course.
I'm
first,
so excited.
Listeners, we love you, and this is a great day to share our love with you for Happy Valentine's Day. Just need to say that.
That's all right. So sweet.
Going on.
Okay, so this is just crazy. I'm very, very excited about this. So my husband texted me about, I don't know, 2 hours ago. He's like, I'm trying to get in touch with you urgently. And like, this is, I know, I got really anxious. I'm like, what the hell?
So this is a joke, right? Because he's
no,
jokester.
It's not a joke. But he broke his finger playing football on Sunday. Okay, so I thought something like had gone wrong. So he's like, you know, call me, it's urgent or whatever. I'm like, oh my God. So like I call him like, hey, what's going on? He's like whispering. He's like, okay, wait, hold on. I'm like, what is going on? He's like, Kelly, I'm in the doctor's office and Milo from This Is Us, who's the main actor, is sitting next to me. Hold on. He's going to talk to you. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like, hi. I'm like, you're such a good actor. I was like, me and my friends all have crushes on you. He was the nicest soul on the planet.
Aww.
I was like, and he's like, well, then it'll be a good Valentine's Day, huh? Like, it was just so cute. So my husband took a picture with him. And so, yeah, I understand you don't watch the show. So,
well, I will be now.
You absolutely need to.
Yes,
it's one of the best network shows.
I've heard a lot about
it. It is so good. And he's really great at, you know, his character and his chemistry with his wife on the show. I mean, it was just.
Okay, it is not going to stun and startle me like Black Mirror. Because
no, I'm
this
sorry. I should have warned you about
really
that.
Really tough for
I
me.
I know. No, this is like a sweet. This is more your
okay.
role.
This is like a family.
This is like Lifetime.
Good, I mean.
You know? I mean, it's sad. There's parts that are sad, but like in a sweet way.
I'm such a wuss, though. I really am.
No,
I'm such
listen,
a
I'm telling
wuss.
You, that's exactly how I would describe Black Mirror. Is it's a car accident. I don't want to look, but I have to look.
But you know, historically, though, I love serial killer novels.
You do?
My favorite. Oh my gosh. The best serial
killer. We're getting a phone call.
We're getting a phone call. I am right, excited. Okay. Hello.
Hi, you're on live.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Who's this?
Hung up. I don't know what that is.
Oh, all
okay.
right.
Was Valentine's just, Day
was
surprise.
A Valentine's Day moment.
Exactly.
People
okay.
wanted to say hello, reach out and touch someone. Oh my gosh. I went to see Motown this last
oh,
week.
Oh yeah. So how was it?
Like the most amazing experience of my life. I
Aww.
Laughed. I cried. We reached out and touched somebody. Everybody was holding hands
really?
And singing, you know, because it's all about the guy who created Motown and
yeah.
Diana Ross and Michael Jackson and all Aww. The people who were developed under mm-hmm. that label. And it was so touching. The actors were incredible.
Oh, wow.
I swear they're better than the actual
really?
Artists who sang the things. So I got, for Christopher, we got the two CDs that had all the original songs from oh. the play from the original artists.
Oh my God.
So they were selling that. It was great. It
that's
was
so
amazing.
Fun.
But I think it's over. I think that was the
oh,
last
is that
day.
It?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, good for you that you got to see it.
It was
oh,
awesome.
Good.
Okay, any other stories?
No, I think we should get right
we have,
to
like,
it.
An incredible guest in the studio today.
Yes.
But before we do that, we do have to give a shout out for our last week's guest, Signe Whitson.
Signe, remember?
Signe.
I know. Yeah, it's so funny. Signe Whitson.
Yes, the author of How to Be Angry. She gave us so many tools on how to help children mm-hmm. express themselves and all that. She was really awesome.
Yes, I want her to come live in my house and help out. Right? Like, come on over. Screw your book. Just come over and help us.
Exactly.
So,
and the
yeah.
greatest book. It's so simple to read and easy and so many tools and exercises. So if you missed that show, please take a listen and... Mm-hmm. get in touch with that book. Okay, well, today, so exciting. This is somebody that I've known for a very long time professionally and socially. We have in studio with us Dr. Todd Feinman. Dr. Feinman is the chief medical officer and co-founder of Dr. Evidence, a graduate of the David Geffen School of Medicine at University of California, Los Angeles. Dr. Feinman completed his internship at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles and his residency in internal medicine at Huntington Memorial Hospital. As a board-certified internist, Dr. Feinman helped develop one of the first hospitalist programs in Southern California and later helped launch hospitalist programs at other medical centers in LA County. As a hospitalist and medical director for a large physician group, Dr. Feinman realized that there were no user-friendly technologies that would enable him or others to use the evidence found in clinical studies to determine the most effective test or treatment for specific patient populations. He and his two partners have spent the last 12 years fulfilling this mission of creating a software platform that could enable anyone to use real evidence to make informed medical decisions. And here he is with us in studio. Welcome, Dr. Todd.
Thank you for inviting me to your most excellent radio show.
Thank you. Maybe call you Dr. Todd, or would you like to be more formally Dr. Feinman?
You call me anything you want. Okay. Todd.
I like Dr. Evidence.
Dr. Evidence.
Okay. I like that.
We'll try to get a hold of that one. Oh my God, you're here, and this is so exciting. So tell us a little bit more about your background and your history, and what brought you into the, first of all, what brought you into the field of medicine?
Well, a long time ago, I guess in college, I was going through career choices from being a fireman, policeman, you know, teacher, doctor, lawyer, and I just decided that, you know, I want to do something to make a difference, help people, and get paid fairly for it, and worked in hospitals and decided that being a doctor was the right choice. And then I decided to become a hospitalist-based doctor during my residency, and that's what I ended up specializing in.
Tell us what a hospitalist is. That might be a foreign term for many of our listeners.
So a hospitalist doctor, it's a relatively new profession or specialty in medicine, and started about 20 years ago. Our job, our responsibilities are taking care of the patients who get admitted.
Hang on one second.
Dr. Todd, we're getting an actual caller.
Oh, wow.
Hello? Hi, you're live.
Hi, I love the show, Tristan. I love the show. I have a question.
Sure.
Hello?
Okay.
Do you have a real question?
I think he hung up again. Sorry about all the craziness.
We have a silly listener. All right.
I think it's the Howard Stern show calling.
Exactly. Yes.
It's got to be that.
But see, Dr. Evidence, Dr. Todd, you're bringing in the calls. We never get callers.
That guy, the guy who called in needs evidence.
All right. So onward. Okay. The hospitalist.
Hospitalists take care of the patients who get admitted into the hospital from the emergency room. We take care of the patients who have heart attacks, strokes, bleeding, motor vehicle accidents. We manage them from the day they get admitted to the day they get discharged.
Wow. Okay. And you did that at Cedars or other?
I did that originally at a hospital in Orange County, and we started the program there with a group called Family Health Practitioners, and then we ended up starting a program at Hoag Hospital and in West Covina Hospital, and then I helped start a hospitals program at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center.
Wow. So it's a very comprehensive kind of experience, right?
Yeah.
Really overseeing the patient as a whole being, as opposed to, oh, you're just here, you're for your leg injury, boom.
But that's nice, so you make sure that person's getting continued care all throughout, basically not lost in the shuffle, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about continuity of care. We make sure that if they're diagnosed with a heart attack, we call in the right cardiologist at the right time, and we make sure they're getting the right medications, and if there's any other medical problems that show up, we make sure those problems get addressed, and we call in the appropriate specialists and order the right tests and treatments, and we manage them door to door, A to Z.
That's so nice. Yeah. So they didn't have this before? That's so interesting, because you said it's relatively new. So what happened before? It was just sort of like the internist worked with them, and then the shift would end, and somebody else would come on, or...
Yeah, prior to this, the traditional way of practicing medicine was your regular doctor, your GP or your family practitioner, would admit you to the hospital and then call in all the specialists. But in the last 20, 30 years, there's so many new medications and interventions and diagnostics and therapeutics. It's mm-hmm. all the state-of-the-art stuff going on that the doctors that were working in the clinics could not keep up with it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what grew out of that was the specialty where doctors called hospitals, all they would do and learn is what to do in the hospital. Oh. So you specialize and you're an expert at taking care of patients who have to be in the hospital.
So cool.
Wow. Yeah. So then what was the shift in terms of going into becoming Dr. Evidence? Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, that's the story. So about 15 years ago, I was asked, while I was being a hospitalist, I was asked to be a medical director of a large physician group, about 80 doctors, 80,000 patients. And in that position, I was asked to, or I was required to do what they call utilization management and quality management.
Sorry, we're getting another call. It's a different call if you guys want to.
Okay. Yeah. Hello.
Hi, you're on live. Hello.
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 Hi. Who's this?
Oh, this is Bonnie. Who's this?
Hi, Bonnie. You're calling into the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly show?
Oh, no, I'm not actually. I was trying to get the show on channel 2, but...
Oh, well, we are on channel 1.
Listen. We have That's Dr. Okay. Evidence on today, if you wanted to hear. It's a really great show.
Do you have, okay. do you have a medical question?
What do I have a medical question?
Sure, about anything you want to know about whether, you know, about medications, evidence. About evidence for certain issues?
Well, I do have some issues.
Okay. We all do. Don't worry.
No, they tell me that I have kidney disease. And since I got you kind of by accident, I really was calling the other channel. But since I got you by accident, how long can I expect? I've managed to sort of keep it at bay, but how long can you do that?
With kidney issues. Can you say a little bit more about what the kidney issues are, Dr. Evidence?
Yeah, I don't know if you've just called into the show. You haven't been listening to it, but this show's about using evidence, you know, data from clinical trials to make informed decisions. So to figure out what you would need to, you know, to figure out your situation, you'd have to tell me exactly what your diagnosis is and what the therapies you're considering using, and then I would make recommendations on what type of evidence you should rely on to make a better medical decision on with your doctor.
Well, they just told me that I have kidney disease, and I think the left kidney is actually worse than the right one. I've been on a really restrictive diet, I also have liver damage, but I don't have a lot of money and I don't have insurance, so my treatment has been very little, honestly. And I don't know that you can actually answer my question because I can't give you enough information, because I really am doing the best I can for what little resources I have.
I would do this. I recommend you do the following. Next time you go to your doctor, you take a pad and pencil or laptop or whatever, and you say to him, why do I have kidney disease? What caused it? What tests were done to determine the cause of it? How accurate were those tests? And then ask them what their plan is. What are they going to do to treat your kidney disease to either make it better or to stop it from progressing? And when he tells you what treatments he's going to do, you say, show me the evidence that those treatments actually work.
Okay. That's a very good idea.
I love it. And if you missed some of those suggestions from Dr. Evidence, Dr. Todd Feinman, you can always replay the show later on once we're on the podcast.
Yes. So we have a podcast on iTunes. It's called Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. So that way you can listen and write down those questions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
I appreciate you taking my call, even if I got you out.
It was meant to be.
Sometimes the serendipity and fortuitousness of just chance is
exactly.
So beautiful. So thanks for calling in.
Get well. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Well, way to go. I loved your suggestions.
Such a perfect... Yeah. I love it when we get live callers because it's such a perfect example of what you're suggesting is mm-hmm. that people should be informed about what the doctors are telling them.
Yes.
Instead of just taking the doctor's word for it, you want to actually do your own research.
Yeah, it's a simple recipe. The recipe is you frame your question, you know, what's causing my kidney disease. You get the evidence and you review that evidence with your doctor and you make an informed decision.
Smart. Yeah.
So back to
what you were talking about.
So
yes.
So when I was a medical director and they were asking me to do this, what they call utilization quality management, it's basically trying to make sure that the doctors mm-hmm. were ordering the right tests and treatments for these 80,000 patients. And at the time, they were forcing me to use these what are called guidelines and systematic reviews, and some people call them, you know, medical cookbooks and practice management protocols. Mm-hmm. And they're basically, you know, textbooks of diseases and treatments, and they basically tell me, the CMO, what treatments should be covered or given for certain patients. Mm-hmm. But then I realized about a few months into that position, that the treatments that I was recommending or that we were covering for patients depended more on their insurance status mm. or what time they got admitted to the hospital or which doctor they were seeing and their ability to pay, as opposed to the evidence. Right.
We're getting another call, actually. Let's see.
Alrighty. Hello, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and therapist Kelly.
Hello. Okay, another hang up. What's going on today?
This is an interesting day.
It really is.
Dr. Todd, what have you brought to the studio?
Yes, exactly.
It's Valentine's Day. People
yeah, exactly.
Are
having fun. Yeah. So, okay. Right
by
now,
the way, listeners, we do love your call. So if you do want to give us a legitimate call, please do so at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. We do have in studio with us today Dr. Todd Feinman, also known as Dr. Evidence, and he is sharing with us about medical treatments and the things that we need to be looking out for and what we can do as the consumer mm-hmm. with this industry. All right. I have a question too.
Yeah. So don't typically doctors know the evidence before they recommend it?
Great question. So we used to have an old joke, how do you hide a dead body from a doctor? Put it inside a published medical journal.
Oh, that's so funny. Right. So there, yeah.
So anyhow, yeah. It's not true for all doctors, but it was true for me and a lot of doctors I was working for. We don't have time.
Yeah.
We do not have the time or the resources mm-hmm. to go look up all of the studies for every test and treatment we order. There is over a couple million studies in the databases that exist right now, the libraries of medical studies.
Uh-huh.
And thousands of new studies come out every month. It is nearly impossible for any doctor to possibly keep up with all that evidence. So you're forced to, or you have to rely on the opinions of experts uh-huh. who do read some of the studies or these guidelines that are out there.
Sure.
Gosh, you know, that's not so different from our field, too.
Yeah.
There's countless research and studies that are going on all the time that I can't keep up with. That's why we go to continuing education.
Sure.
You hope that the you know, the accumulation of all that evidence is going to show up in that 6 hours, and they're going to tell you mm-hmm. what kinds of things you ought to look for now when you're doing cognitive behavioral therapy, or what really works best for couples and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And there's a lot more push right now, too, for evidence-based things going on in psychology, too. So thank you for being the front runner of creating that in the whole field.
Yeah, I did the same thing when I was practicing. I'd go to the conferences, and I took a leap of faith that the experts there had found and read all the evidence, and they had no bias when they summarized it. Mm-hmm. And you just hope that happens, but you don't know. You have to take a leap of faith.
So tell us then the difference between what you do and, let's say, an expert who's giving this advice. You have a software program that analyzes the data?
So this is the key part, is that my two partners and I had to create a technology, a software program, and a process that would enable us to find all the evidence that would answer a specific question. So let's say your question was, what's the best treatment for localized breast cancer for maximum survival? Simple, straightforward question. Mm-hmm. So you got to find all those studies. And then we had to develop another technology that would extract the relevant data out of those studies and then put that data into a user-friendly format so that anybody with any basic computer skills or math skills and English skills could understand it.
And this people can get from your actual website?
So the way the company's structured right now is that we've developed the platform, the technology, and the platform technology is mostly being used by the healthcare industry right mm-hmm. now. It's being used by medical societies like the American Heart Association to develop their guidelines. Mm-hmm. So they're relying on our data, which we hope will lead to better guidelines. And a lot of the pharmaceutical companies out there are using our technology to figure out which drugs they should put in their pipeline or take mm-hmm. out of their pipeline to find new indications for drugs. We're working with IBM Watson. You've heard of them. They mm-hmm. were on Jeopardy. They're a famous machine that can, you know, like artificial intelligence. IBM Watson's using our evidence to inform their machine. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot in the healthcare industry. But we still do individual patient projects every month.
Oh.
So we're still trying to convert. We're still, after all these years, we're still trying to convert the technology into something that's super user-friendly. Mm-hmm. Something that would be as user-friendly as like Consumer Reports or E-Trade. Mm-hmm. That's where we're trying to go. We're not there yet, so we have to do the projects individually for patients. So patients will call us and say, look, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. My doctor mm-hmm. recommended this biological therapy. Can you get it? But I'm worried about, you know, side effects like tuberculosis. Can you get me evidence? And we do a custom evidence project for that patient.
Oh, how cool. Wow. It's like a concierge service almost. Yeah.
One of the things that Kelly and I often do is when we have experts, we pick their brain on our own personal issues. So
yes.
I would love to do that for a moment if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah.
So I was diagnosed with high cholesterol 15 mm-hmm. years ago, which tends to run in my family history, whatever little we know of my family history. And I was put on statins, and I've been on them now for 15 years. I hate being on them. I just, the concept of being on them, but every doctor I've gone to says that this is the best thing. There's red yeast rice, there's all this stuff, but that's basically an herbal statin and all that kind of stuff. Can you have any guidelines for me with this evidence-based
stuff? So I'm going to try to keep it evidence-based. I try to avoid giving opinions on the evidence.
Yes, right. That's what I want. Yeah.
But let's play the evidence game, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so your diagnosis is high cholesterol, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Do you have any other medical problems? You know, heart disease, hypertension.
Hypertension, yes.
You have hypertension.
Yes,
Are you treated for that?
Yes.
So you're treated for hypertension, mm-hmm. high cholesterol, but you've never had a heart problem, heart attack?
Never.
You don't smoke?
No.
Don't, okay,
not
diabetes.
Anymore. Although I have to tell you, the last time I went to my doctor and she did it's the EKG, right? Yeah. And she says, well, I have to tell you that if anybody else was in this room with you looking at this thing, it would look like you're having a heart attack right now. And I'm like, what does that mean? She says, well, sometimes the machine just totally fucks up. But we're going to do it again. And she's like, yep, you're having a heart attack right now, although we know that you're not.
Oh, my God. But it was the machine's fault.
It was the machine. The machine was actually malfunctioning because I was not having a heart attack. I'm here to live to tell about it. And I didn't have to go
terrifying.
To the emergency room, but it was terrifying.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine? Like,
no.
I'd be in some doctor's office who I didn't know who says, we have to rush you to the emergency right now. You're having a heart attack. Really? Okay. Anyway, carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, you wouldn't be the first patient who got the wrong
diagnosis.
False positive. Mm-hmm. Well done. So you have hypertension, high cholesterol, and a family history of heart attacks?
Yes. My father had several heart attacks and triple bypass.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got three significant risk factors. So the framed question for you would be, what is the evidence that statins are better than no statins or mm-hmm. another drug at preventing heart attacks in patients who have risk factors for heart attacks, such as hypertension, high cholesterol, and a family history?
Yes, and by the way, all the diet and the exercise, I do all that. So I'm really good with the, you know, exercise. I'm a fanatic.
She's a Fitbit junkie.
I'm a Fitbit junkie.
You look very fit.
Okay, thank you. So definitely on board with all that. And, you know, but I don't even know that all that would affect my cholesterol so much anyway, because I think it's more genetic. But anyway, please give me
an answer. Yeah, so you get the frame question, right?
Yeah.
So what's the evidence that statins are better at not taking statins to prevent heart attacks? Because that's why you're taking it. So you don't just care about the statins lowering your cholesterol, because that's just a lab test, right? You don't patients don't walk around going, "Ooh, my cholesterol feels great today."
Right? How are you, cholesterol? Yeah. Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you.
Right. That's not what you're looking for. You want a drug that's going to prevent problems like heart attacks or strokes or anything like that, or even
that isn't going to kill me with the side effects.
Right. Or you want to make sure it works, and is it does it work so well that it's worth the potential side effects?
Sure.
So right. those are your questions. Mm-hmm. Does it work? Mm-hmm. Does it prevent heart attacks? And what are the side effects? How many patients get side effects? So once we frame that question, our librarians and our evidence analysts will use our platform, our software, to go find the studies that answer that question. And we will retrieve studies that compare statins and no statins in patients just like you.
Right.
We look for studies that match your profile.
Wow.
And then it will say how many patients took statins and how many patients took placebo or didn't take statins, and they follow them, let's say, for 5 or 6 mm-hmm. years. And then those studies will measure how many patients in each group actually had a heart attack or stroke
right.
or died of a heart attack,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
We've actually done that project.
Good. What'd you find?
She's like, give me the answer. Give me the answer.
So I will say...
Am I throwing the bottle away or what?
No, I don't tell people what to do anymore.
Got it.
But I will tell you this, that you should look at the evidence yourself. I'm going to hook you up after this program. I'm going to send you you know, a login. You're going to mm-hmm. look at the data yourself. I'll give you a heads up. I'll give you a taster.
Sure.
So some of the studies show that the statins reduce the risk of a heart attack in high-risk populations, like I would consider you high-risk,
okay.
by 50%.
Wow.
Sounds pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay.
But what does that really mean? What's that system?
Well, let me break it down for you. This is where you got to really pay attention. This is the basic math that you have to understand. So it reduces your risk of a heart attack by 50%, right? Sounds mm-hmm. great. The actual data showed that the percentage of people who had a heart attack in the no-treatment group was 4%. I'm just giving you one of the numbers. The percentage of people who had a heart attack in the treatment group was like 2%. That's the average.
That's the 50%.
Right, that's
Got
the 50%.
It.
So it was
right.
four. It reduced it from 4%
to 2%,
which is a 2% benefit, but it's a 50% risk
gain.
Reduction.
Yeah, I get it.
It's not for me to say whether that 2% is a low number, a mm-hmm. high number, good enough. Expert cardiologists are split on this, to tell you the truth. A lot of cardiologists will look at those numbers and say that drug really works, you got to take it, it's worth the 2%. That study, maybe over long term that number gets bigger, and other cardiologists and experts will say that that's kind of low, I'm not sure that proves it works.
Mm-hmm.
So you should make your own informed decision with your cardiologist.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. I feel
so
like much more grounded now. I think I'm going to go eat a pound of butter.
Yeah, exactly. Chocolate.
I wouldn't do that yet.
No. Oh, but what about butter?
I love butter. What about it?
She wants to know any studies on butter. Is that what you want to know?
Yeah. Does butter really significantly affect one's cholesterol levels?
So, yeah, that's a great question, too. So what's the evidence that diet or what mm-hmm. you eat impacts your cholesterol level or your ability, whether or not you're going to have heart attack, stroke, die, or cancer. Diet's a huge question, right?
Yes.
There's so many studies on diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we've formally built a database yet that deals with all diets, but we have done a couple custom projects where we looked at Mediterranean diets where, you eat like a Mediterranean diet, with a lot of vegetables and cheese and olives and
olive oil.
Other things, olive oil. And those Mediterranean diets have been associated with fewer medical problems.
That's what I've heard.
I haven't seen a butter study, like butter versus placebo, but I'm going to guess that, eating a lot of butter is going to increase your cholesterol, but I'm guessing. I would have to see the study.
Right.
And
cool.
Which country is the longest living country? Isn't it like an island off of Japan or something? Do you guys do studies on that, with diet and...
There are studies that are called, and I'm not an expert on this, but I have seen studies come across, through the computer, studies on places that are called blue zones.
Yes.
I think Costa Rica, where people, something they're doing or
so cool.
eating, and they just live longer, have fewer medical problems.
So neat.
Yeah, that it's real.
So, okay. So
when are we moving?
Yeah, right.
And they have great surf there, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you surf?
Well, he's
tried to.
Yeah.
Used to a lot.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
As I used to.
Mm-hmm. So okay, so I have so many questions. So I guess this is an interesting question. So how much? Oh gosh, I don't even know how to frame it. How much of these studies is based on the individual versus the numbers? So in other words, you know, what if you're that one person who like doesn't really respond to treatment? And I don't know how I'm trying to say it, but like,
wait, who are you talking about now?
I'm saying, like, how much can we trust the numbers? Because everyone has a different body composition with, you know, how they react to different foods and drugs and things like that.
Yeah, it's really important that when you look for evidence and use evidence that you're using studies that have patients that are most similar to you.
Okay.
So for, you know, yeah, for you, it'd be like, you know, you want whatever medical problem you were dealing with personally, yeah, you'd want somebody, you know, a female, mm-hmm, population. 20, 25. You know,
22. Yeah, exactly.
25, very pretty, you know, look right, healthy, you're thin.
Right.
With, and whatever your medical history is.
Yeah.
So what, and whatever your medical diagnosis is, you want it to match. Apples to apples, oranges to oranges. But that doesn't always happen. Sometimes, uh-huh, those studies do not exist and you have to chop off things.
Oh,
you have to say,
I see,
okay, well, there's no studies on, you know, just females, they include males and females, I'll just use it. Or, you know, the age group doesn't match you perfectly.
Yeah.
Or let's,
uh-huh,
say you're dealing, class example would be like a flu shot. You know,
mm-hmm,
there's evidence, there's studies on flu shot for babies, patients who, mm-hmm, have HIV. There's studies on patients who are healthy adults,
wow,
older people. You, uh-huh, got to, you know, you got to pick the ones that match you.
So cool. I find this absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, totally, because there's so much research that's reported, like in the news and all that stuff, but they never really tell you what the study was actually based on. There's 150
sure,
people studied at Harvard University, discovered that blah, blah, blah. Well, what were their ages? What were their,
yeah,
nationality? What were they eating? What were they doing?
Mm-hmm.
They don't control for all those variables. So a lot of the studies, how do you pick and choose which studies you end up putting into your database?
Great question.
So the way we pick studies on behalf of patients or any of our clients, whether the client's a drug company or IBM Watson or a medical society or a patient or a doctor, we do the same drill, the same thing, same drill, same platform. We frame the question, which we put in what is called a PICO format. You know, what's the patient? What's their diagnosis? What's the intervention they're interested in?
Mm-hmm.
What do they want to compare it to? And what's the outcome? PICO, patient intervention comparison,
oh,
and
cool,
outcome.
Uh-huh.
And that's how you frame a question. We actually have videos on one of our websites that teach patients how to frame a question.
That's
so we frame,
oh,
the question,
uh-huh,
and then we bring in the studies that answer that question. What were you asking about the...
How do you pick which studies you end up putting into the database to use? Because some,
right,
studies are biased and they really,
right,
were based,
mm-hmm,
on silly starting points, I think. I don't know,
yeah,
how to,
or they,
actually
or the
say
company
that,
spin it. Yeah,
yeah,
right,
the
okay,
conclusions so and the data has been twisted.
Yeah, great question. So we try to stay agnostic to the evidence that we put into the database, which means that if the study answers the question, we don't pass judgment on it saying, oh, you know, that's a poorly designed study or pharma, you know, funded it or it's from Russia or,
mm-hmm,
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If it answers the question,
okay,
we put it in the database. Then we teach our clients and our patients or anybody, we teach,
mm-hmm,
them how to grade the evidence.
Oh.
So we teach them,
oh, that's smart,
you know, pick the studies that match your profile. Pick the studies that have the most number of patients in it. Pick the studies that have the longest follow-up. Pick the studies that have the best outcomes. Yeah,
uh-huh,
yeah, replication. Pick studies that have been done more than once or twice and have the similar result and have similar results.
Right.
So if you follow those basic rules, you can,
yeah,
grade the evidence and then make an informed
decision.
If
I remember from statistics, that's reliability, right?
Oh, my God. Good job. I'm so impressed with you.
And then there's validity, right? Reliability and validity.
Yeah, exactly.
I just remember those words.
Oh, my God. Well, I was just going to say, like, you have to be a statistic person, basically, to understand all this. I mean, no?
No, no. That's the whole point is that we have, I'm going to add two words to reliability and validity, relevance. And one more concept, that evidence is in the eye of the beholder. Not, you can show...
Mm.
A pile of evidence to 10 different people, and five will say, you know, I think this drug works, and five will say, I think it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's for evidence isn't always black and white. I mean,
yeah,
you have
that's
to
true.
Interpret it, you have to match it to your own unique preferences and things like that. But that being said, what were you saying? What was
I was saying you have to be like a statistical person,
oh,
but you were saying no, yeah.
No,
yeah.
This is anybody with basic math skills, English
uh-huh.
skills, computer skills can use evidence. And one, here's the proof. We've done hundreds of patient projects for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Those patients have included grandmothers with no medical degrees. We've done construction workers, firemen, teenagers have used the evidence. So anybody can use the evidence. The other thing is, all of you out there, both of you and everybody who's listening is using evidence right now. They're using evidence when they use Consumer Reports and they buy an appliance.
Yes.
You're using evidence when you go on Amazon.com and read reviews, right?
Yep.
It's the same evidence.
Yeah, exactly.
You're using evidence when you go to E-Trade and look at economic evidence before you buy a mutual fund.
Sure.
That's all evidence. It's all basically the same. This is just medical evidence, and we've all been brainwashed to think the only people who can use and interpret evidence are doctors or experts. Mm-hmm. It's not true. Anybody can use evidence.
This is wonderful. I'm so happy you created
this. It's awesome. So I'm like, I know. This one will appeal to you.
Sure.
Gluten.
Oh.
Gluten in non-celiac patients. Yes. What is the evidence on, is it bad for us? Is it good for us?
Does it cause inflammation? Maybe we can simplify it.
Does gluten cause inflammation?
Yeah. Well, I have not done that project. I've heard the question before, but I will frame the question for you. This is the evidence you would need to answer that question. So you'd want to find studies that compare people who eat gluten to patients who don't eat gluten or a low amount of gluten.
Uh-huh.
You follow them for months or years, and you measure outcomes like, you know, how they feel or their gastrointestinal symptoms. Uh-huh. Do they get more, you know, colds or flus? In terms of inflammation, I'm not sure how you would measure that. I guess you could do, you know, inflammatory blood tests or biomarkers or, you know, an intestinal biopsy. Mm-hmm. But
now he's getting medical on us.
It's actually so complex. That part's so complex. I'm not sure I would do that because what if they came back positive? Does that mean you've got a disease? Lab tests, remember this. This is an important concept too, is lab tests are called surrogate markers. They are supposed to predict whether or not you get a disease. So if you have high cholesterol, it predicts that you might get heart attacks.
Uh-huh.
If you have inflammatory markers in your bloodstream, maybe you're more likely going to get, you know, gastrointestinal problems from gluten or get cancer or something. But sometimes they're not always predict it correctly.
This is really important, though, because it just really made it come crystal clear to me. So it's like high cholesterol isn't really the problem. It's, will the high cholesterol turn into the bigger problem? Like, you can walk around with high cholesterol and be totally healthy.
Fine, yeah.
There must be people who have lived to be 105 who have high cholesterol.
Right. Well, exactly.
Yes.
Does the high cholesterol cause heart attacks and stroke? Now, they have studies that have proven that.
Mm-hmm.
The more important question is, does the drug actually prevent those heart attacks and strokes in patients who have high cholesterol?
Right.
Yeah. Just because your cholesterol went down on the drug, you still have to prove that it prevented heart attacks and strokes and death.
Absolutely fascinating.
It's wonderful.
So I'd like to know from you, what are your favorite projects in the research that you found?
I love answering that question. Okay, so my favorite projects over the years, well, first one has to start with the first project I ever did, which was for my father. Mm. One of the first projects I ever did. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer. This was like 15 years ago when I first, you know, when I first started thinking about the idea of creating this technology, and my partner Bob Batista and Edon Shalev, who's the chief technology officer, we started talking about, you know, how we would do it. Mm-hmm. And one of the first projects we did was for my father, who was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he was in his 70s. And the question was, what is the evidence that a radical prostatectomy, removing your prostate, would increase his survival? And what are the rates of incontinence or impotence? He was particularly interested in incontinence because, quote unquote, he said, if I have to wear diapers, I'd rather die of cancer.
Right.
So that was really important to him. But most importantly, he wanted to know, does surgery increase survival in his age group?
Yeah.
So we looked up the studies. And one of the studies we found was this autopsy study that showed all these men had died of other diseases with their prostate cancer. They lived with their prostate cancer, and they died of other problems. They didn't even know they had prostate cancer.
That makes sense. Wow.
And then we started seeing other studies coming out that were showing that with watchful waiting or active surveillance has reasonable survival rates. Mm-hmm. Like doing nothing had high survival rates. Patients were not all dying of prostate cancer. And if I remember the numbers correctly, it showed that, you know, patients who had surgery, the, you know, survival rates at like 5 to 10 years was like above 90%. And if you didn't do surgery, it was in the 80s. So there was definitely a benefit in some of the studies with surgery, but it wasn't this huge benefit for my father. That's what he said. And we didn't tell him what to do. We said, here's the evidence. And my father said, you know what, given these numbers, given what I'm seeing, I'm not going to do surgery. And he lived another 15 years, never had a problem with his prostate cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good story.
I love that.
Yeah, and Kelly and I are both avid animal lovers, like complete animal lovers. Do you, anything about animal stuff that you can tell us about?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. So we've actually done evidence projects for animals. I mean, we've had patient, you know, people call up and go, one of the projects we did was a dog who had a pituitary tumor, and she wanted to find the surgeon with the best outcomes.
You know, which surgeon, so cool.
Yeah, a veterinarian who had the best outcomes. So we found a veterinarian who...
You don't know, by the way, that Kelly's only vaginal birth was with her dog, Moose.
That's what I said.
Wait, I'm confused.
Yeah, he's like, I joke because I had a C-section with my first son, and my second son was a surrogate, and so I always say my only vaginal birth was my dog. Like, I'm so close with him. I love my dog. Like, he is
I can see that video.
Exactly. He is, it really feels that way to me. He's the sweetest soul. So I'm so glad that this woman, but go on. I want to hear the rest of it.
Yeah, this was evidence-based veterinary medicine. I mean, we went out and got data on pituitary surgery, and she went to the doctor who had the highest survival rates, and that's where she took her dog. And then a really interesting project that we got many years ago that we're still working on, we've got the group that asked us to do this project ran out of resources, funding, but we're still trying to get it going, is a project. The framed question was, what is the evidence that animal research is valid and reliable? So the project took off and was launched, and we started bringing in all the studies that have been done, mostly on dogs and cats and monkeys and some other mammals. And the concept was to determine whether or not the findings you find in animal studies match the same findings you would find in humans. So if you give drug A to a dog and his blood pressure goes up, if you give the same drug to a human and their blood pressure goes down, that's the opposite effect. That means the animal model is not valid in that situation. So they're trying to see what percentage of all the animal studies that have been done actually show that the animal physiology didn't match the human physiology. Oh, therefore, it's bad science. It's not a good
research
model.
Right, so we rely on things like, well, saccharin killed all the rats.
Right.
Might do nothing, really,
for us.
For us.
Yeah.
But we use rat studies and things like that. That's just not necessarily comparable or a crossover.
Yeah, you have to ask, you know, what dose of saccharin did they give? Is it comparable to the same dose a human would get? And and most importantly, if you actually did the study and you gave equivalent dose of saccharin to a rat and a human, do their physiologies match enough that they would have the same outcomes?
Right, proportionally, right? You're taking a 1 pound thing and a 190 pound thing, and just giving one packet to the rat and one packet to
the human, right?
Be completely different.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's even old stories of where they showed that penicillin, you know, was not good in guinea pigs, but obviously was good in humans. And I think there's some opiates that will kill a dog but won't kill a human. So there's, you know, opposite reactions, and so it's animal research is very tricky. There's the evidence is showing that some of it or a lot of it is not valid, but some of the animal research they're doing out there is, you know, probably leading to some discoveries. But it's important to distinguish the two. They should, you know, this project was intended to help, you know, figure out which animal research, which studies should be done, and which ones don't have any value for humans.
This is fantastic. I can't believe we haven't had this sooner, and I'm so glad that you're the pioneer in this. I mean, this is just so
exciting.
Wonderful, and I'm sure it's so comforting to people, because I'm the type, like, when I get an issue going on, like, I'm a doer. Like, I'm like if I were diagnosed with something, I'd be, like, pouring into, you know, figuring it out, and so it'd be so comforting to call someone like you and say, hey, listen, like, I need the evidence. Like, I want to weigh this out, and... You know, I get
and
like
that's what's so troubling, though, too, is it's, you know, Dr. Google, right? People go on to the internet and you have people's opinions. You have like a layperson who has no medical background at all, who's giving you like four paragraphs of their opinion about what you should and shouldn't do. And some people are just naive enough to not know that may not be a valid
right
presentation of what's going on, you know. And even like WebMD, and I'm not dissing any of those because they are fantastic, but even those, a lot of the stuff is just reporting things that, you know, 4 out of 5 doctors said that smoking Pall Malls are good, right? That was the old advertising, right? Yeah. As if implying that smoking was not harmful to your health.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, WebMD has a lot of opinions and words, but good luck trying to find data, numbers there. And like you said, we do want to be that place where patients can go and get evidence. And we're actually... we're launching a new program because we want to reach out to more patients. We're launching a new program called Doc Coverage. One of the most problematic issues we get from patients is that they get recommended, or their doctor recommends a therapy or a test, and the insurance company denies it. And they will call us and say, you know, I need evidence. A lot of these patients will call us and say, I need evidence to prove first that my doctor was right. And if my doctor's right, I'm going to use that evidence to reverse that denial. And so we just decided to launch a program so we can help more people. That's called Doc Coverage. And if you're a patient out there who's been recommended a therapy and you want to make sure it's the right therapy and you want to reverse that denial, go to Appeal for Coverage, appeal4coverage.com, and we'll try to help you.
That's great.
Wow.
And
that's
only on the internet, or do you have an app too, or where can we find you?
Yeah, so we're on the internet. It's the drevidence.com is the website. Again, that website's mostly built for healthcare companies. It's not really patient oriented. The Doc Coverage site, which is appeal4coverage.com, is written for patients.
I see.
There's another fun site to go to. There's a small production company that makes videos about the topic of evidence.
Oh, cool.
What is evidence? How to use evidence? They're trying to make evidence fun and entertaining, and this production company is trying to convert people from being opinion based to being evidence based. Yeah. And that website's called showmetheevidence.com.
Oh, that's so
and
cute.
It's tons of fun videos on that site.
Oh, that's great. And then you are part of the Show Me the Evidence also?
Yeah, yeah. They're an independent production company, but obviously consult with them and help them develop their ideas, and big fan
That's
of what
great.
They do.
That's great.
You know, there was no better gift than we could have given our listeners today than the gift of wellness and health, right?
It's true.
The ability to know that you can have some sense of control over your health and well-being, that you're not just in the passenger seat, but you can really take the wheel and be in the driver's seat. What else would you like to impart to our listeners? Because believe it or not, we're just about out of time.
Wow, that was fast.
I know.
Well, just a couple taglines that we live by. And one of them is, inside every patient, there is a doctor if they have evidence.
Ha! I like that.
I like it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And just keep saying, show me the evidence every time somebody, a doctor or expert, makes a claim. And my final tagline is, in God we trust, all others must bring evidence.
I love that. Thank you so much. You were so wonderful. God.
That was the Miracle on 34th Street. Did you ever see that movie? Yeah, and it was the dollar bill that was what proved that you had to just believe in Santa Claus, because we all believed in that, right?
Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah.
That's where it came from, probably.
Probably. Oh, my gosh. So amazing.
So great.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
So
that's
having me.
We have Dr. Todd Feinman, also known as Dr. Evidence, who was just so welcoming on our show to be here. So great. And the couple websites he suggests that you take a look at is Appeal with the number 4, coverage.com, and showmetheevidence.com.
I love that.
I love it. Next week, we have someone who's going to be after my daughter Tiffany's heart. This is the Ayurvedic Lifestyle Wisdom by Acharya Shunya.
I think that's
Shunya?
Right.
Yeah. I hope so. Oh, my goodness. So I'm very excited. Maybe I can get Tiffany to call in.
I would love that. I think that's great. I would love to hear her thoughts, too.
Me too. That's very exciting. So we're just like on a wellness path there.
I know. I love that because it personally interests me so much, and I know it does for you too.
Do you have a babysitter tonight?
Yes. I'm going out.
You're going out of the town.
Yeah.
Do you know where you're going, or is it a
surprise? No, it's a surprise.
I'm telling you, you have to call me if you get a Barbie dipped in chocolate.
That is so funny. Oh, my God. Oh, it's more like Ken and chocolate.
Ken and chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. He can take the Barbie. Well, thank you so much for listening. If you missed the show or want to go back, you can listen to it on iTunes or Stitcher.
And so please go to our website also, docandtherapist.com, and send us those emails anytime to docandtherapist@gmail.com. We love you. Happy Valentine's.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.